you know, it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth as the cochlear implants, maybe not that helpful. But then as I've watched them evolve through the years and seen what they are able to do for some of our students, if they're programmed correctly, if the therapy is going well, it's not just a plug it in, do the surgery, plug it in, and you're ready to go. It's a lot of work behind it. But when the work is put into it, I'm seeing really great access capabilities for many of our students.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Susie Tiggs. And Susie is the Director of Education at the Maine Educational Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing in the state of Maine, and she is in Falmouth, Maine. Susie, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So, Susie, tell us a little bit about what your role is and what's going on in the state of Maine.
Right. My role is officially the statewide director of education and family services. And the Maine Educational Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing provides services to students who are deaf or hard of hearing throughout the entire state of Maine. We have a little over 600 students. Some we serve in the home if they're birth to three. We may serve in their district. Or we do have a few students who actually come to a centralized program hosted within a local school district. Plus, we have about 25 preschool students, ages 3 to 5, who come onto Mackworth Island to go to school there, which used to be our residential school for the deaf.
So you've gotten away from the students all coming to live at one location, and the local districts now are handling it, education.
Yes. Probably about 20 years ago, the students started moving back towards their own district. When you think of highly qualified teachers and you think of all the different levels of math, English, science, social studies, all the electives, the career technology, there wasn't any way that we were able to provide all of those options to students. So it made sense for them to go either back to their home school or to come to a centralized program to be able to receive those type of access to services.
Gotcha. Fantastic. So it certainly has changed deaf education. I was telling you a little bit off camera, I have some experience and have worked with, especially when I was in Michigan, the cochlear implant and the initial rollout. Now, this is 20 years ago better, but I was not far from the University of Michigan and worked directly with their cochlear implant program because I was working in Jackson Public Schools with the students that were deaf and hard of hearing. So I got some great experience at that time working with cochlear implants. So, and as technology moves forward, what have you seen as far as how students are learning when they have this kind of an impairment?
It's been fascinating to watch because I first started probably 39 years ago. I met my first student with a cochlear implant, and he was the only one anywhere that had one, and it wasn't very effective for him. And, you know, it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth as to the cochlear implants, maybe not that helpful. But then as I've watched them evolve through the years and seen what they are able to do for some of our students, if they're programmed correctly, if they're going well, it's mm-hmm. not just a plug it in, do the surgery, plug it in, and you're ready to go. It's a lot of work behind it. But when the work is put into it, I'm seeing really great access capabilities for many of our students.
Yeah, it's a traumatic surgery. It's a big deal. It's not something to be taken lightly, for sure. Because you destroy all of the hearing in that ear when you put that implant in. So if it doesn't work, or the child rejects it, which I've seen that too, unfortunately, it breaks your heart. They have no hearing whatsoever.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's always hard. And for some students, it just it doesn't work. It's not effective. Some choose not to use it eventually. Often if we've got students with comorbid disabilities, if they have autism or if they have some other type of disability that makes sound or noise, if we've got some sensitivity to it, then putting a cochlear implant on makes things too loud or very uncomfortable. So they may choose to not use them and keep pulling them off, go without their cochlear implants, or the same with hearing aids as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. One of the biggest struggles is getting those little ones to keep the hearing aids in and getting moms to fight that battle with you, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say right now is your biggest challenge in what you're doing?
So in deathbed in general, we tend to be, we're a very tiny group. Deaf kids are less than 1% often of a special ed population. And so where special educators often have a larger group of people around for them to network with, special ed directors have larger groups to network. Deaf ed often doesn't have that. So I am the director of the program in Maine. I have some coordinators who work with me, some other administrators, and then we've got 25 teachers of the deaf for the state of Maine. So there's
the entire state. You're talking about you're the only one. Wow.
Yeah, the entire state. So, you know, being able to network with colleagues in Maine, I'm networking with special ed directors, which is great, but they don't have exactly the same concerns or the same needs that we do. So most of my collaboration is with deaf ed directors in other states. It's great having those colleagues to be able to learn from and with, but all the programs are set up differently. So I can call and say, hey, I need some help. But if their program's not set up anything like ours, it's somebody to bounce ideas off of that doesn't necessarily help with, well, we did this and this worked, that worked, things like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so do you end up having to travel or do you do a lot of your meetings and such remotely? How do you manage that?
A lot of our meetings are remotely. We do a lot of email, a lot of texting. I've made really good connections with Department of Ed, deaf ed people throughout the United States or other deaf ed directors in other states. And so we do a lot of texting, emailing. Annually, there's a conference for educational administrators of schools for the deaf and programs for the deaf that happens in a different place each year. And I usually travel for that. And that's a great way to connect with, sometimes it's superintendents from schools for the deaf. Sometimes it's directors of mainstream programs similar to what I'm doing. But the common theme is administrators working with programs who serve deaf students. It's always great to do that. Love
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So does that move around? Like, does it go to different parts of the country every year?
It does. The various schools for the deaf put in a bid to host it. And
gotcha.
So the last one we had in April was in Pittsburgh. Last year was in South Carolina. And it
gotcha.
Was in California before that. I think to Salt Lake City. I've been all over the U.S. It's fun to get to go tour the school for the deaf while you're there. And then the conference itself is in a hotel in that general area.
Yeah. 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 Of course. Yeah. Been to many, many, many conferences over the years for sure.
Yeah.
And going to more, always going to more. Yeah. Networking is a big part of what you do when you have a company that like what we do. So, and this is great. I'm telling you, the podcast has given me an opportunity to talk to so many amazing people and what's happening in education. So it's really cool.
I can imagine. And, you know, when you look at education throughout the United States, everybody does things a little bit differently. And then even within the state, things are done a little bit differently. And so, you know, I always enjoy networking to find out how people are doing it and solving problems that we're coming into, and some of which help, some of which don't, but it's always fascinating to learn.
So what do you guys do when you can't find a teacher and there are hard of hearing students or deaf students in an area? How do you manage that?
So we actually have a few students who live way, way, way out away from anywhere where our teachers of the deaf are. And so some of our teachers will remote in with a student, and the student has a paraprofessional with them, mm-hmm. or an interpreter or both. And then the teacher of the deaf provides instruction to the students through remote learning. Mm-hmm. That is definitely not ideal when you mm-hmm. start talking about young children who are deaf, who are really depending on visual access for communication. Mm-hmm. And as you know, kids' attention span is limited to begin with.
And right.
It's very, very challenging. Often what happens is our teachers of the deaf have a much higher caseload than they really should. Mm-hmm. And so some of our students may not be receiving as much service as really would be helpful to be. Our teachers mostly are itinerant, so they're traveling from school to district. Right. School district may have 40, 50, 60 kids on their caseload, some mm-hmm. of whom may be receiving consult services, some may be receiving direct services, usually not more than 1 or 2 days a week, even if the student really would benefit from more deaf ed teacher support. That's not something we're really able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that we talked about a little bit before I hit the record button, and I even said, I'm like, well, I should have started this recording sooner. We were talking about remote SPED teachers and remote it's interesting to see how different districts are responding to that. You know, we're getting some states are okay with it, and some states are really pushing back and going, no, but then everybody's complaining that they can't find teachers or SPED teachers. And I'm it's a dichotomy that I'm trying to figure out, you know. It's like, because we want our goal always is to serve students and serve schools, right? So how do you reconcile that and a little bit. I just would like to have recreate that conversation a little bit if we can.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. One thing that I saw before COVID, during COVID, after COVID, was a not very good understanding of what remote instruction, virtual instruction should look like. Mm-hmm. We would see some virtual instruction happen before COVID just because some of our students are so far out. And we've got families with children birth to 3 who are receiving services, and some of those would happen virtually. The ones that were very successful were the ones that there was somebody else on the other end helping yeah. to facilitate that. And really, it was more that the educator on our side of the camera was coaching someone else on the other side of the camera
right.
on with that student. When COVID hit and all of a sudden everybody had to be specialists in remote learning, it didn't go over so well. And, you know, we had districts who felt like the kids needed to be in front of the camera the entire day or instruction wasn't mm-hmm. happening. And
right.
So I feel like now that we are back in person, school districts still don't necessarily have a good understanding of what it should look like. I think a lot of them are thinking about how it looked during their foray into remote instruction during COVID, which right. was definitely not best practice, did not meet the needs of the kids often.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. You know, 7.5, a kindergartner in front of a computer for 7.5 hours. No, they're not going to do that. There's no way. Right. Yeah.
Even for an hour is, you know, an awful lot.
Yeah. And you touched on something that I think is really important is when you're talking about remote and talking, you know, we use Zoom. Schools know Zoom. I mean, it's like we could have this fancy bells and whistles platform, and there are companies out there that do, but most schools know Zoom. And Zoom is something that is very stable, you know, and that's part of the reason why we have chosen to stay with Zoom, because it's HIPAA and FERPA compliant and it's stable. And even with a lower bandwidth, you know, because it is something that you have to download onto your computer, but you can also screen share, which is therapists love that. But
right.
The other piece I wanted to go back to was that facilitator and that coaching model in birth to three. It has to be a coaching model. That is the best, you know, you end up being a consultant more so than the therapist in the room, because you're teaching, you want to be teaching that parent and that parapro and whoever on the other side to say, this needs to happen outside of just our session, right? It needs to be something that is carried through, like a BCBA as well. Like the interventions need to be continued after the therapy session ends, right?
Exactly. I would tell my teachers, now you have to remember that the child is not just deaf on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 when you're right. there.
Exactly.
The child is deaf all day, every day. And if you're not building the capacity of the rest of the staff working with the student, why bother even going for that hour? Because you're not making that big of an impact at the end of the day if it's not being carried through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really important. And I always tell people too that parapro or that facilitator or that mom, they are your hands and feet in that room. And they are so essential. And having a good relationship with them will make or break that session and make or break whether or not that child is going to learn. And those pieces of it are just so critical. So
they really are. Worked with a lady who had contacted me and had been doing some virtual instruction, and she was somebody I had worked with face to face previously. When she told me she was doing virtual, this was back probably 3-4 years before COVID, I just kind of went, oh, because I wasn't envisioning it well. And she said actually she felt like she had better luck doing it virtually because the school districts required the child to have an adult with them on the other side. Mm-hmm. She said, right. Usually when I walked into a school, the kid and I went into a room, worked together, and then the kid went back to the classroom and there was not carry through.
No follow through. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing happened after she left. But because they were requiring to have an adult with the child, she was coaching, working, modeling for right. that adult, so the adult was able. And that was a real aha moment for me. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. And it definitely made a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things where you really have to train the trainer, you know, and then they can go and train others and help others so that it's carried over instead of just in a box isolation, you know. Yeah. So it's great.
I definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same with any of the therapists. When I was in the classroom or when I was doing itinerant, I felt like it was very important for me to work very closely with all the therapists working with the students, because if the student wasn't sitting correctly, wasn't using their hands correctly, if things weren't placed in the right place, if the communication devices did not meet the kids' communication needs of the kids, then, you know, nothing was working. So I wasn't a physical therapist. I needed to know how that child was sitting. I'm not a speech therapist. I needed to know how the child was communicating. And that team thing was essential.
Yeah. Yeah. It is for all. But boy, when you have low incidence like deaf and hard of hearing is, and there's just, and it's not anybody that does it on purpose, but there's just a lack of knowledge. And when you have that lack of knowledge, it matters, right?
Everybody's busy. You know, you want me to collaborate with how many people and what? And I told my teachers there's, you know, I would just assume them not see kids for a week and go meet with the therapists and collaborate. And because I feel like missing one session with the kid to work with the other therapists is going to make their sessions that they have in the future so much more powerful and so much more meaningful that they need to make that a priority. They need to take the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other piece of it is that hearing aid and FM system or whatever. The technology,
yes.
is it working, right? Is it
Correct.
Is it working? Yeah. Not you have the, I have to get the child to wear it. Now you have to make sure that it's connecting and that it's working properly. And yeah. So
all of that. You were mentioning Zoom, and I was working in Texas during COVID, and a lot of the school districts would not allow Zoom. They wanted Google Meets.
And it's horrible.
When you start looking at thinking that you need the teacher and the interpreter on the screen, plus the classmates, plus whatever PowerPoint is going on there. And the kids had Chromebooks. So they brought home this 9-inch screen with the interpreter, the teacher, the classmates, the PowerPoint, the everything. And it did not go well, needless to say.
Right.
And so some of the school districts worked it out so that they sent home an extra monitor for some of our deaf kids, but not all school districts were willing to do that.
Yeah. It's just it's one of the, and you just do the best with what you can sometimes. I know that is part of it. It's always breaks my heart when you know a child isn't going to get what they need, but you do the best that you can with what you have. You know, and that's in those situations as a professional, I was always exactly, let's get the parent involved. Let's make sure that whatever we're doing is the best with what we have, you know, rather than throwing my hands up, because I know it gets frustrating for therapists and for teachers when they can't get what they need. Yeah.
Well, so. And I think part of that comes back to if it's that difficult for the student to access, was that really the best practice in how the lesson was provided to begin with?
Yeah,
would that
very true.
With smaller groups or done in individual short sessions instead of 55 minutes with 5,000 things crowded on that screen?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was always a fan of the smart boards. You know, they get those great big boards, and then my face is huge on the wall for them. And I've done self-contained classrooms that way, and that was always fun. They was like, "Your face is so big."
Oh, yes, it is. Hi.
Yeah. So
I can see you better.
That's right. That's right. So fun, super fun. You know, one of the things that when I started Lighthouse, I was our first SLP. You know, I was starting my own business. So I hired myself. And then as we grew, I had to step away from therapy. And that was the hardest thing for me as a business owner and an entrepreneur and a leader to go, I need to let somebody else do this because I cannot be the CEO and an SLP at the same time. I tried for a little while when we were short a therapist, and I didn't feel like I was effective anywhere. I wasn't effective as a therapist. I wasn't effective as a CEO. And it was like, okay, and I'm a Christian. And I was like, oh God, I have to give this up, don't I? And he was like, yeah, you really do. Because now you're going to serve 2,500 kids instead of 55. So that's a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I started as an administrator, I moved from a classroom to an educational consultant position. And it's kids, I'm not going to be seeing kids. And probably my first whole year in that position, I would call some of my friends and say, I think you need some technical assistance next week because I think that I need a kid fix. And so I would go out and get to go play with kids for a little bit. And
it
got a little easier as things left. But definitely, what's the impact I can make here? What's the impact? And I'm an educator through and through. I would rather educate staff to be able to educate kids, build the capacity of everybody. More kids are going to be impacted positively by that.
Right. Absolutely. 1,000%. And that's a mindset as a leader you have to take. And that is, I'm not the only one who struggles with that. You aren't the only one who struggled with that. It is definitely when you step out of the classroom and step into leadership, it is a transition. And so many people, for those people that are listening and you're making that choice, it's a good choice when you're making it because you still are having an impact. Mm-hmm. You're still serving, you're still doing something that is going to make life better for the children that are in your sphere. So
well, definitely.
Yeah.
And you're always kids to go play with periodically. So maybe I'm not the primary therapist or the primary teacher, but I can go and play, coach, you know, be there, support,
right,
and get my kids.
Yeah. I keep telling people, I'm like, I'm waiting for grandkids. I want grandbabies. And my kids are all in their 20s. And, you know, they're not, that none of them are ready. But I am. I'm ready to be a grandma.
My kids are all fun. My son just turned 30 and my daughter's 28. I've got grandkitties.
Oh, grandkitties. Yeah, I have grandpuppies and grandkitties too. Yeah, but no grandbabies. I want grandbabies. Okay, one last question. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one last question I try to ask all of my podcast guests. And I'm going to preface it with, you can't use money. Money, everybody needs more money. I get that. But if you could miraculously solve one challenge in your sphere and what's going on in your world, what would you want to solve? If you could just make it go away and fix it, what would it be?
The time for collaboration.
Ah.
You know, money, time, those are the things that never seem to be enough. But I guess part of it is that helping people to understand the priority, that time for collaboration is essential and is worth their time.
Yeah, it is worth the time to do it. Yeah, because the knowledge that you have is going to be passed on during that time. And we don't always realize how much knowledge we have, do we?
Exactly. But we don't hold all of the knowledge. So.
No. Oh, no. For sure. For sure. That's oh, gosh.
I've got a lot to share and other people have things to share with me. And why we need to be playing well together and taking that time to do that.
Right. 1000%. I agree. Yeah. If you're not continuing to be open to learning, you're going backwards. You need to go forward. We need to move forward. So, well,
definitely.
Susie, an incredible conversation. Really, thank you so much for your time. Where should people go if they want to learn more about you and what's going on in Maine?
Well, our website is mecdhh.org. That's the Maine Educational Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. And pretty much if anybody just Googles Deaf and Maine, it's going to come up with MECDHH. Great.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you for your time. And I love the background. I know you're outside, but it's beautiful. It looks absolutely gorgeous where you are. So I'm a little jealous. I want to be there. I love Maine. Maine is a beautiful state. Absolutely gorgeous state.
It definitely is. And everything's green. And, you know, I'm almost kind of feeling like I needed a jacket on because it's just a little breezy.
But yeah.
It's gorgeous. Janet, thank you for having me today. Yes. I've enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for being on the Brighter Together podcast, because we really are brighter together.
Definitely so.